Welcome to Leadership Reimagined, Episode 7, Time to Reflect with Malcolm Tyson, Managing Partner and Chief Strategist at Stratization. During each episode, we look at leadership from the vantage point of what's it going to take for leaders to lead their organization forward into a new future. I'm Dr. Jane Levis, your host. Malcolm, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dr. Levis. Really enjoying sort of what this time period has given us in terms of, you know, more, less busy, you know, being more in the moment as opposed to what do I need to do tomorrow? What do I need to do next week? What do I need to do next month? You know, and it just really kind of hit me last week. It was like, because my wife was like, why are we like sort of sheltering in place, but your schedule is still so busy? It's like, you know what? I don't know why that is. So I really took the time to kind of say, you know, let's really get in the moment. You know, let's get in the moment. And, you know, everybody does it. Everybody has to take a point in time where you kind of scrub their life, you know, and say, like, okay, what am I doing? Am I still on impact? Am I still, you know, doing the things that I set out to do? And I've been going through that process. And since we're talking about leadership, that's, I think that's a, you know, that's a great leadership tactic, right? It's really, given where we are now, is your mission still the same?
Yeah.
Is how you're going about it still the same? And, you know,
and I'm going to assert that it's probably not the same.
Exactly. Right. It starts at that question, but ultimately it's like, well, my environment has changed. So how do I adjust to that?
Right.
How do I adjust to it? And how do I still accomplish my mission? But with given that my environment has changed, how do I look at things differently and how do I execute differently?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things at the beginning of this, you really heard a lot about empathy, really heard a lot about sort of putting yourself in other people's shoes, because you can't, the old style leadership, it doesn't really work anymore. I would say for most of the people I talk to and most of the people I connect with, they don't, it's not the dictatorship. It's not the my way or the highway.
Right.
I think that's an old philosophy,
mm-hmm.
right? And to really get the most out of your people, not just for today, but years from now.
Right.
It's engaging them. It's mm-hmm. engaging them. It's making them be a part of the process, right? And not just mandating them, right? It's not just I'm the leader, so you do what I have to say. You do what I say.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because hopefully, I mean, and this is one of the things that I really encourage leaders to look at is hopefully every employee that you're hiring is the best that you can hire.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that they're the best at what they do. So mm-hmm. why would you not encourage them to take ownership of their job, of the work that they do, of the output that they create?
Yeah.
And let them, in essence, run with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, you bring up a great point. Hiring the person that's the best for that role.
Mm-hmm. Right?
How do we really know that? Like, how do we really know that? We have their resume, we check some references, maybe. How else can we get to know that's the best person? Is that that's the best person of the people that you got in your pool, right?
Right.
Right? But what if that pool is flawed somehow?
That was so great. Such a great question, because that was exactly a conversation that I was having a couple days ago, late last week. Is, you know, if we're trying to have diversity in our hiring, are we having enough conversations with enough people to ensure that we're having diversity, that we have diversity?
True diversity. True diversity.
If we say, well, we're not getting women to apply for these jobs, or we don't have Black women, we don't have Asian women, we don't have Black men, we don't have a Latinos. Why? Why are they not applying?
Right. So, I mean, that's a huge question. One of the things I talk to leaders about, both HR leaders and just business leaders, is sort of doing the legwork up front, right? Because some of the things, there's a number of things that can be the answer to the question that you just posed. But let's deal with the low-hanging fruit, right? You need a person yesterday.
Right. That's
one of the things that really, it limits your pool.
Yeah.
You need to fill this slot by, you know, next week. How can you honestly say you have a good cross section of candidates? You can, right? Because you're going to get whoever, you know, like whoever happens to be looking at this thing at this particular time. And so we talk about doing the legwork, right, up front, give yourself ample time. We talk about creating a solid job target with people above the person, people below the person, and actually those people talking, right? What is the best candidate? What does that person look like? How will I interact with them? Like doing that up front, and that takes time. Right? It takes time, but I think it's well worth the time if you want to say we got the best candidate, because that's ultimately what you want to do, right? What are some other things that you may have run into, that like low-hanging fruit that because I mean there's some bigger problems, right, with diversity and trying to achieve it, right? But what are some low-hanging things that you've come across, maybe?
So some of the low-hanging things are getting really clear. So I had a client that's gone through this with a couple of different positions in their organization. And one is they tended to tolerate too long because they were afraid to not have someone in that position. So they would keep that person, even though that person was disrupting the whole organization.
Wow.
And then when they finally did something about that, then they hired real quickly.
Just to fill the spot.
Just to fill the slot.
Yeah.
And so finally, we had a really big in-depth conversation. And part of it was getting clear on what their culture is.
You can
teach skills.
So yeah.
It's much harder to educate somebody into your culture. It's really hard if you're not even clear what it is.
That is, I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's the crux of a lot of what we're talking about, right? It's that culture. And then sometimes I've come across this where you have a leader who is disconnected from the culture, doesn't really even know how they fit into the culture, and or sort of oblivious of the fact that, well, you indirectly endorse this behavior. Right. That's setting the culture, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You either have an on-purpose culture or a default culture.
That's it. Yeah. 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 And so I've been really, as a part of, as I mentioned, part of taking this sort of step back from the things that I've been doing, that was one of the things that became really clear to me. And I've been sort of shying away from it because culture is such an amorphous sort of, it's not really tangible, but it is tangible sort of
right.
thing.
You sure know when it's not.
Yes. And so I've been really not wanting to deal with it, but that everywhere you turn, you can try to tackle some of the fires around it. It always comes back to culture.
Yep.
So I was like, you know what, Malcolm, instead of doing all these little things, let's just focus on trying to help leaders create that culture, be aware of their culture. If they're disconnected from it, help them get into, because regardless of what company you're in, that leader is going to shape the culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can talk to any expert, you know, from here to Timbuktu, they'll tell you the same thing, right? The leader drives the culture. And if they don't know that, first of all, if they don't know they drive the culture, you have a problem, but that's, you can fix it. I think the other thing, as you mentioned, is they know the culture, but they're sort of using it to their advantage, right? And not using it to, you know, develop their employees. They're just sort of using it for some selfish reasons. And I've seen that as well. And trying to get them out of those habits and out of those tendencies that push down their employees instead of, you know, understanding that their role is to really get their employees, like lift them up, right? Like really lift them up. And, you know, that's an education process within itself. But, you know, just getting them to that point is a challenge. And so that's what I'm going to be pushing for. I think I mentioned to you before, I was looking to create this whole webinar thing on mm-hmm. leadership. And I was like, I just started seeing a lot of those out there. And I was like, but nobody's really talking about culture, right? Nobody's really talking about, everybody's talking around it.
Right.
You know, but I was like, well, maybe start putting some stuff about culture. And that one of the courses, my innovation leadership course, the second module is about innovation culture, innovative culture. And that is what I've been putting it off because it's a heavy lift in some cases, right? It's a heavy lift. And so, but I figure it's more impactful. It's mm-hmm. more impactful, right? To talk about culture and deal with culture as opposed to all the little things that basically lead up to culture.
You know? Right, right. And coming out of the virus, mm-hmm. whatever we thought business was before, that's not going to be what we're doing.
Yeah.
For one thing, too many employees have had the opportunity to be work from home, be fairly on their own. You know, nobody can come walk down the hall and look over their shoulder.
Right.
And there's some good and bad in that because there's conversations you don't have when you can just see somebody at a moment's notice.
Yes. Yes.
And there's a freedom in how you can do things when you don't have that.
So
there's a new level of intentionality that I see that's going to be really important coming forward, and that the companies that really run with that and consciously create culture and share that and empower their employees. Mm-hmm. Who are all these people that have been working from home going to want to work for?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great point. The thought process it's like one of those things where I've heard this a while back. It's like once you give someone filet mignon, they don't want regular steak anymore.
Right. Right?
And so with this, with people working from home, and some people may just not like it. They want to be around people. But the people I've talked to, they enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. They enjoy that autonomy. They enjoy that freedom. How do you then bring them back in the office, right? How do you then bring them back in the office and expect the same level of productivity? And again, we get back to culture. Is your culture such that people don't feel forced to go back to work? They feel like, you know, my manager trusts me.
Yeah.
Right? He trusts that he doesn't need to look over my shoulder every minute. He doesn't need to send me an email every 15 minutes to check on what I'm doing, or instant message or something.
Right.
Right? And so I think it's going to be a challenge for leaders to embrace that. You know, I feel like I was talking to a gentleman. He's old school guy. And he was like, well, you know, I really want my people to come back in the office, but I want it to be safe. And I was like, well, what if, you know, what if there is a vaccine that comes out, like, you know, let's just say beginning of 2021, are you going to force your people to come back? He's like, yeah, they need to be in the office. Like, but for what? Like really, what do they need to be in the office for, right? And he started, well, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, you really need to get a pulse on what your people are thinking.
Right.
Right? You know, it's that's sort of what we were talking about before, right? Is it, you're going to mandate these rules once the environment gets back to some type of normal, or are you going to be flexible and adjust and, you know, really, you know, engage your employees to figure out, you know, what's the next best move? Like, and I guess one of the things I've found is the leaders that are successful in business, it's not a us and them such a situation.
Yeah.
We're all on the same team.
Yeah.
Right? And I think you kind of pointed this out, right? Like sometimes the leaders forget that, right? They forget that we're all on the same team. We're all trying to do the same thing. And as a result, you get these disconnects and you get, well, let me make the decisions for all, you know, 20, let's just say 20 employees that I have. You think they're all going to really have the same opinion about this thing, you know? And so, yeah, so I think, you know, this is a great opportunity for leaders to really be engaging, not micromanaging,
no,
but really be engaging. Because I think, you think about it, when this virus is over, when the shelter in place, the pandemic, are we just going to go back to the way things were? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Because, you know, think about it. Your employees have been working from home for, what, we're coming up on month four.
Yeah.
Almost five.
Five, yeah.
So you look at, by the time, and you know, and now we've got some other things going on, so it's probably going to stretch out. So if you've had your employees have been working from home for 6 to 9 months, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and now you're going to say you have to come back because why?
Right. Yeah.
We didn't do a good job working from home.
Yeah.
We weren't productive. You know, basically by mandating, you're implying that they weren't effective.
Yes.
That you couldn't trust them, all of this stuff. And I agree, there are going to be people that want to come back.
Yeah.
Because they want that social connection on an ongoing daily basis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there are other people that are like, I don't ever want to go back. And then there are people that are kind of in between. Yeah, I'd like to go in a couple days a week.
Right.
I get so much more done. I need the social. I need to talk with people. I need to just kind of see what's going on.
Yeah.
And when I'm home, I can really focus on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's going to take some new levels of leadership, creating mm-hmm. culture mm-hmm. in engaging people so that they know a story that I share is, okay, I'm a leader and I've got this vision and we're all going to California. And I've mm-hmm. created this vision and we're going to California. And half the team ends up in San Francisco and the other half of the team ends up in San Diego.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a long ways apart and two mm-hmm. totally different cities.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got to California.
You're in California. You're right. You're right. Yeah. It's so valuable to I think especially now to get engaged with your employees. Just at a fundamental level. Mm-hmm. Like how are they, to your point, how are they coping? Mm-hmm. Right? How are they coping with this? Are they okay with being at home? Is there something else? Like you said, there's probably going to be three sets of people, right? The hybrids, the ones who want to mix, the ones who don't want to come back, and the ones who do.
Yep.
So how do you still get them, your example is so good because you can tell them everybody come back to the office. And those that don't want to come back, that's immediate disengagement. They're going to be immediately disconnected, right? The ones that do, they feel like we're all on board, we're all good to go, everything's fine. The hybrids, they're going to be indifferent, mm-hmm. right? They're going to be indifferent. And so how do you keep them? And all you did was say, everybody come back to the office. How do you keep them motivated? How do you keep outside of their paycheck, outside of, you know, it's a job.
Right.
How do you keep them motivated to perform? Because, you know, as a leader, you still have to think about growth. You still have to think about productivity and revenue. Like, how do you do that when a third of your workforce, you just unintentionally disengaged, right? So, surveys, connecting with them. I love how at the beginning of this, how Mayor Cuomo, or is he governor? Is he the governor of New York? Cuomo?
Yeah.
He's the governor, right? He was just so visible.
Yeah.
And he still is, right? And I think that is, we talk about leadership in the new normal. That should be the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As far as engaging with your employees, engaging with people, just communicating with them. That's, I think that at a fundamental level is where you start. Because you start putting out communications, they see you're visible, that is going to evoke a response.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, you know, you're pinging them and asking them questions. It's just, well, how do you feel about that? You know, how do you feel about that? Is this something that you want to do? I would venture to say, like, if a leader isn't asking, and let's just say winter 2021, that it's time to go back, right? Everything, the vaccine's in place. We have orders from government and federal and local that it's time to go back. We can reopen offices. I would say that if a leader isn't asking his employees what they want to do, they're doing a disservice,
mm-hmm.
right? If they're not asking those three questions, do you want to come back? Do you don't want to come back? Do you want to do a hybrid? Because I think those are your only choices, right? Those are going to be your only choices. They need to ask them that. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer type question where you keep everybody engaged. You keep everybody engaged. And then I think the next thing, after you get that to that point, it's really about, you know, how do you keep that, to you, using your example, we're still going to California, but how do we end up in the same place? How do we end up in the same city, right? And like at the fundamental, like, okay, we're still going to California, but some are going to stay at home. Some are going to be in the office. Some are going to be doing the hybrid thing.
Yep.
How do we then, once we get that clear, how do we then keep the ship moving to say we all want to go to San Francisco? How do we get to San Francisco? What are some of the things that we can start doing? And what are the conversations that we need to start having to ensure that we're doing that on the right in the right time frame? Because one of the other aspects I thought of when you gave the story is we want to get to California, but some of them get to San Diego, some of them get to San Francisco, and some of them get there at different times.
Right, because some people drove and some people flew.
right. And so how do we get there at the same time? If people do get there at the different times, it's strategic, right? We're doing that strategic. It's not a surprise. Like, here, like, where have you been? You know, that sort of thing, right? How do we get everybody moving as a collective? How do we get more strategic about our movement? Because we still want to move, but we need to be strategic. We need to be smart. We need to be asking the right questions. But I think, like I said, the first part is if we're going back to the office, that fundamental question and just getting the communication ball rolling.
That is probably the key to everything.
Yeah.
Is that communication. And one of the things that I hear a lot is over communicating. And I have to say, no, we don't need to over communicate because people stop listening. What we need is very intentional communication.
Yes. Genuine. Yeah.
You know, conversations to the point. What are we focused on? Where are we going? Why are we going there? What do we need to create to get there? Who do we, you know, all of these conversations that are different from you need to do this.
Yes.
That's not a conversation.
No, that's a directive.
Yes.
It's a directive. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I mean, the over communicating. What does that really mean? What does over communicating really mean?
You know, I think that's the email blasts that come out.
Just communicating, just to be communicating.
Just to communicate that don't that like the boss that's calling you three times a day, four times a day.
Yeah.
Just checking in. Well, no, you're not just checking in.
Right. Just kidding. No. Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's some people, I think you just got to know your employees, right? Yeah. You got to know them. Some of them would really appreciate that. And they'll run through a wall for you for that, right? But some of them are like, why do you keep calling me? Like, and that, again, unintentionally, you become disengaged.
Right. So, it's and that's why I call it intentional communication.
Right.
Because you have an employee that you know feels cared for, feels appreciated. If you talk to them three times a day, then you do that.
Yeah.
If you have one that says, if you talk to me once a week, that's fine.
You're right.
Don't be calling that person.
Exactly. They're going to get pissed.
Yeah.
They're going to get pissed and just like, they're going to tune you out.
Yeah.
You might tell them something important and like, I don't need to hear it. So
right.
That's interesting. And the other thing I was going to say about communication, that because you make a valid point that, you know, it's probably the most important thing to do, right? But doesn't communication really frame your culture, right? Doesn't that really like set the boundaries of what your culture is going to be about, right? With your questions, with your comments, with your words, isn't that really what shapes it? And then obviously your behavior too. But and with the fact that we're not we're all in our separate geographical locations now. Right, your words are way more powerful than your actual behavior at this point, right? People can see your behavior when they're in the office and when you're around. But right now, your communication is really framing your culture.
That is so powerful. And it's then how do you deliver on what you've communicated? And that goes both ways.
Yeah.
You know, from leadership and from your employees, because as you say, you know, when you're in person, your behavior says a lot. When you're not there, then your commitment to what you said Because I can't see you working.
Yeah.
But yeah. I trust that you said you would have this done today, that you're either going to call me and tell me that you've run into a problem, but you don't wait until the minute it's due to call me and say, I ran into a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so it's exactly, your communication really becomes the reflection of your behavior.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't want to say it replaces behavior, but it becomes so much more valuable now where people cannot see. They can't see you walking through the office.
Right.
They can't see how you respond to comments and stuff like that. I mean, you have, there's this buffer with the coronavirus going on and us being sheltered in place. There's a buffer, right? There's not real, like there's not a real direct way to see people's behavior and responses. So we can, there's always that, you know, that thing. I remember a mentor of mine telling me a long time ago, before you respond to an email, take like a 10-second break, right? Like just breathe it out. And what I feel like with the coronavirus now, it's built in.
Mm-hmm.
It's built in, that buffer of when you get an email and how you respond to it, whether we are on a meeting call or a meeting Zoom or something like that, you have a buffer. There is I can literally, you know, just kind of click a button and I'm not present anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see my avatar, you see my picture, and that's different, right? And that's different. And so as a leader, I was just thinking, like, our communication is one, but how do we make our presence felt, right? How do we make our presence felt in the times that we're living now? And I would just go back. I think your communication, I think you hit it. It has to be intentional. That's the way I think you make your impression felt. You actually use your power of communication to frame and shape and allow and disallow things to happen within your culture. Because we're so spread out now, does that mean your culture goes away? I would hope not, right? I would hope not.
Yeah.
It's tougher. It's certainly tougher. But that's why I think what you said is so important. You have to be intentional with it. Because if not, culture is so amorphous, it can change right under your nose if you're not being intentional about what you do and what you say.
Right. And all of a sudden, a culture that was predicated on trust, and we trust our employees to do the right thing, all of a sudden shifts based on the types of communication and how people are communicating to, we don't trust you.
Yeah.
Or you had a culture that didn't seem to be quite so trusting, that now, because you know things are happening and people are doing their work and you can't see them doing it, but you know that it's getting done.
Mm-hmm.
A culture of trust begins to emerge.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like, what do you want your culture to be?
Yeah. And being aware of that is, you know, so important. Like really being aware that, you know, what I say is going to impact the culture now.
Yeah.
What I don't say is going to impact the culture now. And fostering it, actually, you know, leaning into, you know, the things that will build a culture that you want. And it goes back to your question, like what type of culture do you want? Right? Because it, like you said, it can shift. Whether if you're not intentional about it, it can shift on its own. You're going to have dominant personalities who can just really turn things around for you, good or bad.
Right.
You know, and not knowing that, like I said, when we started here, you have these leaders who are disconnected from that. Right. They just, for whatever reason, they're not seeing the value of the voice of mm-hmm. their employees. And before you know it, I mean, I've always understood the same mentor that told me, this has given me so much advice throughout my career and life in general. He talks about the three things, right? You know, most employees, do you care about me? Can I trust you? And are you going to help me grow in my career? Right. And if your communications aren't sort of supporting that, the culture is going to be toxic. Yeah. It may not start toxic at the beginning, but eventually it will become. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen it so many times, and particularly in small businesses who have these leaders, they government contracts, they grow really fast, really quick, and they just don't take the time to, they hire a bunch of people and just throw them on contracts and don't get to take the time to connect with them, don't take the time to hear them, to how they can improve the contract and grow. They put it all on themselves, and before you know it, the culture takes over.
Yeah. Would you do me a favor, repeat those three questions again, because I think those are really critical.
Oh, yeah.
Any leader, CEO, even team leads, and you know, to remember those.
Yes, yes. So from the employee's perspective and to their manager, team lead, whoever, do you care about me? Can I trust you? And are you going to help me grow in my career?
Yeah.
Right? Those are the three things.
Think if whether you're the CEO of a small company or a large company, and everybody's looking like the next couple layers down.
Yeah.
And answering that question for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
What that would do to.
Oh, man.
Organizations.
Yeah. And think about the culture that it would create. It would create a culture of caring, a culture of trust, a culture of sort of lifting each other up, right? If I lift you up, I know my manager's lifting me up. I know his manager's lifting him up, and we're all moving.
Yeah.
Progressing. Right?
Growth. Yeah. Growth, progression, change, learning, knowledge, you know, all of that stuff is going to come out of
exactly that. Exactly. And you know, it's a wonder why companies just don't buy into that, right? Why don't they all say it, but you know, you have to have the systems in place to support those things, right?
Yep.
Like do you have succession plans, right? Do you have that in place? No, we're just going to get the best person who's been in most seniority, been here the longest. Like that doesn't always work, right? Do you have metrics around your trust? And that's hard, right? I work with, and I'm sure you work with businesses that do that. Do you have metrics around your care? Like, are you really caring? And you know, a lot of professionals think that employee engagement surveys actually capture a lot of that. But I think it's a little bit more than that, right? It's a little bit more than just an engagement survey. Because the other thing about engagement surveys is they don't always follow up. Leaders don't always follow up on the activities that are determined from the survey. So it's a little bit more. I mean, that's to me, that's a great, a typical sign of whether you care or not. Is if you do what the survey says. So.
Yeah, what's the follow-up? Oh, they do this survey. How many times have you heard? Oh, yeah, they do that survey every year. It doesn't make any difference.
right. Yeah, that's ridiculous. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's a great it's a great idea to ponder on. And really, I never really thought about it until now, how much it can impact a culture. If you actually embed that in your culture, caring, trust, and like growing each other, like helping each other grow, man, that'd be a great place to work for, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it be? Yes, exactly. Well, Malcolm, let's go out and change the world.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So this has been fabulous. I have just loved, my mind is just spinning with ideas.
Yeah, mine's too, mine's too.
So is there anything that you want to share that you're up to right now? And
I think, as I mentioned at the beginning here, I've taking a bit of a course correction. And so I'm really pushing on my innovative culture course. I'm really working on that right now. Pushing everything else to the side and really focusing on that, getting that out. It's a bunch of what we just talked about, but with a innovation twist on it, right? Like, how do we create that culture of caring, of trust, of growing with the purpose of being producing commercially viable innovations, right? Whether it be a product or a service. So I'm really focusing the next couple of weeks on trying to get that out. And I'll definitely be shooting that over to you as soon as it's done.
Yeah. And so where will somebody be able to go find that?
They can go to my website, stratascension.com. They can also, I'll send out, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter at BizOpsGeek. Geek is G-E-E-K, BizOpsGeek. And so, yeah, so all my stuff will be on social media. I need to do a better job with Instagram, which is one of the most active sites right now, but I'm just one person. I'm trying to do it all.
Yeah, I got that. But I want to thank you for today. This has been a fabulous conversation.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thank you for providing the platform for us to kind of talk through these things. These are big, world-changing problems that we're talking about. And I think if we just, take one step at a time with platforms like this and other platforms where we can get the word out about what we're trying to do, I think it's awesome. So
yeah.
Hats off to you, Jane.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Malcolm. We will talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Mara.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. Make sure to visit our website, lovisconsulting.com, to access previous shows and learn more about us.